Everyone, you're listening to Operation Dichotomy. I'm Paul, I'm your host, and we are the bridge between perception and reality. If it is your first time joining us here today, I want to tell you that our goal here really is to create a society of greater understanding and empathy. We want people to be able to slow down in their speech and just be more eager to listen and hear the other perspective, not just be stuck in their own. Even just that small shift, we believe, is going to solve a lot of the problems that we see around us today. So if that sounds like something that you're interested in or want to be a part of, go ahead and connect with us on Instagram at Operation Dichotomy, or you can find us on the internet, like everybody else, at operationdichotomy.com. And last but not least, if you found any value in these podcasts or any of our content at all, or if you just think that what we have can make a difference in this world, please go ahead and share it. And you can start by giving us a nice review on this episode. Let me assure you it's going to be a good one because our guest today is pretty awesome. And I'll go into talking about him in a second. But again, please go ahead and share. We really do believe that together we can make a difference. So that brings us to our guest today. His name is Owen Pearson, spelled O-W-I-N, right? Not with an E. And then last name, Pearson, P-I-E-R-S-O-N. And I think, actually, I won't tell you that right now, but maybe later. Anyways, so this guy, he is a content creator. Some would call him a social media influencer. Generally, they go together. He is also an LGBT and mental health advocate, which we're going to talk a little bit about today. And he, quote unquote, is the author of his own story, which sounds really cool. And if you know the guy and actually talk to him, you'll get to see and understand what that means. Without further ado, let's welcome Owen Pearson to the show. Thanks for being here, Owen.
Hey, thanks, Paul. Thanks, everyone. It's good to be here. Thank you for having me.
For sure, man. We are excited. I'm very excited, as I told you before. man, if we could talk about all the things that we talked about in detail, it would not be enough time today.
No, we would need a whole book series, a whole podcast dedicated to all those conversations.
Which, you know what, in the future, maybe we could do at some point.
Hey, any sponsorships that want to reach out to us?
that's Owen Pearson.
I know.
Right. Today, though, we're going to focus in a little bit on the intersection and the overlap of faith and sexuality. And the reason why I want to talk about this personally is not just because Owen has a lot of experience personally with this, but many of you know that I have a background in pastoral ministry. I served as a pastor for 8 years. I kind of grew up in a very Christian bubble, sad to say, for first 30 years of my 34 years of life. And I just had a lot of questions, not just for Owen, but just how these things really do overlap. Like, what does it look like from the perspective of someone who's walked that path? So one of the things that I didn't say about Owen, which we're going to talk about a little bit, is that he actually was a youth pastor back in the day. So actually, Owen, why don't we start there? How did you end up in youth ministry?
Yeah, so I grew up in a church environment my whole life, a Christian background. My parents are both missionaries before they got married, and they did missionary work in the church, preaching everything. And I was the first born of three boys. And I grew up in Northern Virginia, so we had a pretty small-knit community. I would say maybe 100 or so families, but we would also have churches along the East Coast and in general. So I just grew up every Sunday going to church and, you know, all the other traditions we had to do, and Easter Sunday, Christmas, and just talking about God and then praying every meal. Everything was embedded into my life from very early on, like, before I probably could walk, like my mom taught me how to pray, you know? So all those things were always just a big part of my life. But then on top of that, it was always a very strict upbringing. Like, I couldn't even hang out. It was a different time, you know, I was born in 92, but I couldn't even hang out with school friends sometimes if they weren't in the church or if they didn't have a church background or my parents weren't sure of them. So I caught on early on that my background is very different than my peers. And then youth ministry for me was always a safe place, because in middle school, high school, it'd be a place where I would go every Friday night for youth group, or on the weekends we would have a camping trip, or summer breaks we would go up to upstate New York for a big workshop or camp trip with other kids from my church. So just a lot of congregation, a lot of community was built. And I really loved that, you know, being in the closet, that's a big part of it too. I felt safe in my church community, even though they didn't really know who I was or supportive, but that's a whole other part. But youth ministry itself, I got into it in early high school, I would say, actually. After I homeschooled myself, I got really involved in the youth ministry. And then the minister at the time, her name was Mari Grace. She was great. She was always so involved in our lives and doing all the work. She had to move to New York for school. And then she asked me and a couple others to like take over. So I had more free time. So I just got involved. And 6 years later, I was doing everything by myself after a couple years.
Oh man, everybody else quit.
Yeah.
That's what happens in youth ministry.
It is. It's a quick turnaround.
But you enjoy that experience. And from what I understand, you love the kids.
I did. Mm-hmm.
What led you out of it, I guess, if we were to fast forward a little bit?
Yeah. Like you said, I really loved it. It was so great to be a part of kids discovering their faith and having the hard questions that no one else was asking thought out. You know, I was never the one who was like, I have all the answers. It was more, how can we help build your personal relationship with God? And when my personal relationship with God started to struggle, I kept feeling like, I guess some would call a hypocrite, or some would say like, I felt like I'm not leading the path the way, I'm not walking the walk, mm-hmm. or talking, my actions aren't mixing with my words. So it was a lot of that dichotomy, and a lot of the kids actually with my youth group, there's about 25, 30 of them that, some of them like I've literally known since they were like babies or elementary school, graduating high school, like, because we just grew up together. So very tight knit. But I was usually one of the older ones in the community in that group. They were all graduating high school and they were all about to live their lives outside of our bubble in Virginia, DC. And it was like, I started having panic attacks, like really intense panic attacks of like, what am I doing with my life? I gave my whole life to this. Like, I put this before school. I put this before my social life. I put this before my everything because I'm so passionate about it. Mm-hmm. But then when I saw everything kind of shifting and changing out of my control, that's when I started thinking more about myself and my sexuality and who I wanted to be and what that looked like, because before that I really suppressed it and I didn't really think on it. Mm-hmm. I would have moments, but then that was another thing. I learned how to pray early on and go to church, but I also learned from my parents and from the church community that being gay was wrong. Mm-hmm. I was told this narrative that if you are homosexual, you're going to hell. Mm-hmm. Gay people don't want families.
Since when?
All these things.
Do you remember how young you were when that narrative started?
Oh, elementary school. Like, because mm-hmm. I actually knew I was gay since elementary school. It's crazy. I have very clear memories of like thinking about boys and like having crushes on guys and always seeing girls as like friends and nothing. Like, I never had like crushes on girls. It was more like I wanted to be their friend or pretend to have it so people wouldn't make fun of me. Mm-hmm.
But so elementary school? Or did you say fifth grade?
Elementary school.
Okay.
Third or fourth grade. Yeah. Yeah.
So if you're born 92, that's what, like around 2000, early 2000s?
Yeah, maybe early 2000, yeah.
And that was a different world back then.
Oh, 100%, yeah. It was a very different world. It's not as open as it is now, which is, it's a nice world now in the LGBTQ space, but back then it was very dark and different age of internet too, and different age of just how we communicated about your sexuality. Mm-hmm.
Okay, sorry, I keep interrupting, but can we go back to that where you, from a very young age, you were told that all these things about being gay and what they, quote unquote, they want or don't want, they don't want families. Was this stuff you heard in the church or was it just around your community in general?
Oh, in the church, I heard that. So it was very clear that being gay was wrong and you couldn't have any form of like that relationship, like, or you'd be excommunicated, or you would hear stories of if people did come out, like they could pray the gay away. And there were church organizations, run organizations, mm-hmm. you know, conversion therapy pretty much, where you were able to go and get better if you chose to keep God first and pray the gay away, which in my head was very scary and very intense. But also my friends, the close friends I did tell, we were so naive and so young, we didn't really know the difference. So all I could really see is my parents' strict rigidity and, you know, this is the way because this is what they learned in this church and this is what they chose. But for me, it's like, oh, I didn't choose to be gay. It's just always how I have been. Mm-hmm. So all I can really do is choose to hide and choose to be safe and choose to do the things I know, which is like faith and community.
So, I mean, I can't imagine the struggle of a young kid growing up being a certain way, being told that this way is quote unquote wrong.
Right.
And because I remember back then too, people used to say, or at least talk about homosexuality as a choice where like you choose to be this way. Therefore, you can choose not to be. I mean, obviously, yeah, that's changed a lot. But
it's changed a lot, but I always tell people, like, I had to come out to myself first, and that took many years. Like, I didn't really come out to myself to my early 20s, and I'm 28 now. But there were instances in public school and just walking around with friends or just moments where I would get bullied for being gay, but I myself didn't know I was gay. Like, I knew it, but I didn't want to admit to it. So that was also very hurtful for people trying to out me or just people in general thinking a certain way of me before I could even share who I was and doing it in a very negative light. You know, it's like, it's not like they were trying to out me for positivity or like being like happy for me. It was like, oh, Owen's gay. Like, let's all like make fun of him or, oh, like he's so different. Mm-hmm. So that was a big struggle too. And there was no one in media or news besides like maybe Ellen or a couple others that like were really living their life, you know, but even them, you hear like horrible stories of their beginning.
At what point were you able to admit to yourself or come out to yourself?
It was definitely in my 20s. I went on like a mission trip to South America, to Paraguay. And, you know, before that moment, I would go to summer camps or I would have moments where I definitely had a crush on a guy or I definitely felt like, oh, like I wish I could share openly about this. And it was never like intense or like in a negative way. It was more like an innocence, just like, oh, like I feel this pure joy or love when I'm around this person. And then in Paraguay, like I just remember it's so beautiful there. And it's like we were doing all this work for these indigenous people. And we were on this boat, like a very indigenous boat. Like it's not like a nice cruise ship. It was like on this boat to get to the village. Like it took 14, 24 hours. Everyone's like very congested, a closed space. And I remember going out on the boat by myself. And I looked up the stars and I had never seen a clearer sky or like, and I love nature. Like nature is the way I connect to God. So when I saw the nature and the skies, it was like beautiful hues of purple and indigo and just so many stars. Like, and I just remember like getting so emotional and asking God, like, why is this my life right now? Like, why am I in the most beautiful place doing your work, but feel like dying, feel like everything's not worthy of who I am, like who I want to be and how I want to preach your word. And I just felt this immense pain, but like immediately after, like out of nowhere, I just felt this immediate calm and clarity and like love. And like, it was just like a warmth and it was a very cold night. So just a big warmth of like support and like understanding and all these, you know, amazing adjectives, verbs, whatever you want to call them, that I always, you know, would throw at other people as being a youth pastor or my parents, you know, I know they loved me, but whenever you hear love, but then also hear the negativity from that person, or persons or community, it all kind of numbs out. Like you could tell me I'm a great person, but also if you tell me that you don't support homosexuality or that you think it's a sin or it's wrong, they both clash out in a way. And it's very numbing for someone who's struggling with their sexuality. So to be in a moment where I was totally vulnerable in Paraguay and I felt nothing was working out for me. And then I always turned to God. Like God for me was like a best friend. Like, not just like this powerful almighty figure who would like strike me down if I did something wrong. So to have that, you know, putting all this work into my relationship with God, into my church, and then finally, and then feeling this big sense of warmth, it was very calming. And it motivated me to like, be like, okay, I can be out. I can figure this out and I can do it with God.
Before, when I asked you about what led you out of ministry, you kind of mentioned that there's all this crazy stuff, quote unquote stuff that was going on. Right. Did it directly correlate to you coming out in the church, or was it different stuff besides that?
It was definitely a mixture of both. So in my church community, I didn't really see anyone come. There was no one that came out and stayed in the church, and there was no one that really came out publicly and I heard good things or that I knew of. It was either if you come out, you leave the church, or if you come out, you try to fix it and like pray the gay away. Those are like the two options I always saw in my church and in general. So for me, I'm a very independent person, so I wanted to have control in something, especially my story. I didn't want anyone else to like have their judgments, because my biggest fear in life was always people leaving me. Like I was like, I don't want people to leave me. I'm such a people pleaser. It's like, I need to have everyone like me. And that definitely plays into being a content creator for sure. But that's psychology of it. but I needed people to like me. So I lived on the East Coast, right? In the East, if you're in America, you know the East and West Coast have different cultures, very different lives. So on the East Coast, it was, I think, year 2015 or 2016. It was in December. I was leading a high school winter camp retreat workshop with Virginia, Maryland, and a couple other communities. So it was like maybe 50, 60 kids. And during that workshop retreat, I guess I was 22, turning 23, potentially. Yeah. At that retreat, I had another like aha moment of like, okay, like I'm going to come out to everyone. This is going to be my last workshop. I didn't really come out to everyone there because I didn't want to take away their moment. It was like, I'm just in this leadership role. But that December, I decided like, oh, I'm going to move to LA in March or April and just tell everyone like, I'm gay, I need to figure out myself, blah, blah, blah. But I also didn't want being gay and moving to LA to connect too much. I wanted them to be two separate entities. Can you say the question again?
So I guess like, I'm just thinking about the transition now. Like, was it the coming out of you being gay that impacted you leaving your ministry position, or was it just a whole bunch of crazy stuff that happened to be at the same time, your Paraguay moment that led you out?
Yeah, so the Paraguay moment was like about a year before this winter workshop. Uh-huh. But I think I was going through not like a correlate crisis, but I was realizing like, well, I mentioned the high school students are all graduating and leaving, going to different parts of the world. I was already doing ministry for 6 years. I finished college like a year and a half before this. There was a lot of transition periods for me. But I also was getting pushed in the church to become like assistant pastor and being pushed to become So I was transitioning from youth pastor to assistant pastor, because then like, oh, you can help with young adult ministry. You can help with doing Sunday services. So I was getting pushed to get in this role. And as a people pleaser, I was like, oh, I can do it. But one of my best friends, Angela, you know, she was one of the first people I told back in middle school that I was gay. And she struggled. She hated the church more than I did. Like, she really did. And I'm sorry for putting her on blast. But it was more because she saw how painful it was for me being gay and putting all my effort into this church. And her thoughts were, she knew that the church wouldn't support me if I came out. And she was just so in pain, and it really hurt her mentally too, that I was putting all my efforts into this church that at the end of the day, would they support me? You know? And I had to think about that, really ponder, like, does the church support me being gay? And that kind of played into like my efforts in as a youth pastor and then potentially assistant pastor. Would all my efforts into this community, into this church matter once I said these two words, you know? So I took that very seriously and sincerely, and I had moments where I individually took out friends or reached out to kids, and I had moments where we hung out one-on-one, like just shared and about life, and I was telling them I'm moving, and then I also was like, I'm gay. And like each time I said those words to the youth ministry or my friends or young adults or youth pastors that I also looked up to that I didn't tell, every one of them was so supportive and so like happy for me. Uh-huh. And that was super clarifying for my whole life, my whole soul. But I still wasn't sure when to come out to my parents because that's a whole nother thing, and when to come out like publicly online or to my church. So because being gay was such a important thing for me to discover, and the church, I feel like I already, like I drained myself dry. Like I gave everything to my church. I was like, I need to, the same way I went all in as a youth pastor, I need to go all in this journey of my sexuality, in this journey of who is Owen Pearson and what am I doing in my life. Mm-hmm. So it was a very like rash, but it was a very necessary decision from that December in 2015 to 2016 in March when I moved to LA. I did a cross-country road trip for a month. In that time period, I literally just worked like three jobs to save up as much money, and I said goodbye to all my closest friends and people like had like epic hangouts. Mm-hmm. And like they're like, oh, what are we like, why are we having this cool hangout? I was like, oh, just cuz. And then like at the end of the hang, like at the end of the hang, I was like, so guys, I'm moving to LA. And they're like, what the fuck? What are you doing? Oh, man. So, yeah, I'm very much, yeah, all in, very spontaneous person. So
okay, so it doesn't sound like the church like pushed you out, or there was this huge conflict where, oh my God, Owen's gay, yeah, he can't be a pastor. Okay, so that's good. It's good to hear that.
That was an inner conflict, yes. But fast forward a year and a half later, I did come out publicly. I have a YouTube video of my coming out, and that created a lot of stir and tension. And unfortunately, also when I came out to my parents, they weren't super supportive, and they still, it's a very personal and very intense back and forth right now. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that was unfortunate. When I had that video come out, like my community of youth, the youth, people my age, millennials and younger, very supportive for the most part. There's a few that, you know, have their own opinion. But the elders in the community, like the people I considered like aunts and uncles and people like that, they still had support for me. But there was a big paradigm shift of, Owen will come back to us, or Owen's just going through something, or LA changed him. And I knew when people went to LA changed him, people were like, put me being gay and LA together. Yeah. And I didn't want that to happen, but unfortunately it kind of did. And there was another big community in the church that had made their own church congregation that was very negative about it too. So there was a lot of negativity, and I did get a lot of hateful DMs and people messaging me and just things that I knew would happen, but it happened pretty intensely after coming out.
Was it okay? So when that kind of stuff happens, this is from my perspective of the other side, of their side in a sense.
Yeah.
I can see some people, I can see people hating for hating just because they're terrible people relatively. And then there's other people who are, let's say your parents, or if my parents were to come at me for something, as ugly as they are coming at me about whatever, I know it's because it's with the good heart, right? They want whatever is quote unquote better for me, even if they might not know what the heck that is. Do you think that a lot of that was the former, where people were just like, oh my gosh, Owen is the stigma of what it means to be gay, I can't believe he was a Christian, blah, 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 or more like, oh man, we're really concerned for his soul, I need to say something, be it ignorant or not, obviously it's kind of ignorant, but right. Do you think there was a good heart behind some of the stuff that was being said?
Oh, totally. Like I am the first to admit that when I was younger, like I probably was homophobic, you know, to myself, you know, it's self-hate, you know, until mm-hmm. you really love yourself, you don't really know yourself. And when you live in a culture, like a Christian background, a very religious background, or just a very different background, when you're not exposed to certain things or educated, you become ignorant or naive. And it's all about the education, you know? And It took me 23 years to come out to my parents. So I always tell people, like, it's going to take my parents time to come out having a gay son, mm-hmm. being able to be okay with that, being okay to be happy about that and share about that. Of course, it was still painful to hear, like, my mom stopped going to church for a few months after I came out publicly, you know? And of course it was painful to hear I had a huge fight. I was, like, in Europe for work and I was having, like, the best of my life. And then me and my dad just started texting, and then he said something that really triggered me. I don't even remember what. So I, like, got my phone out and, like, I called him, like, screaming at him, because I was like, I can't believe you're saying this and this to your friends or these people, like, you know, like, their kids are my friends. Like, I can't believe you said that and thought you could get away with it. Like,
oh man,
a lot of, like, hate back at him. And then he started sharing hate to me. But, like, when we looked back on it, we talked about it more, like, sincerely. And he was reaching out to his friends that he knew in the church, because he was scared and lonely and confused about, you know, why I didn't come out to him sooner. And he was just sharing because he didn't know where to turn. He was also scared. And for him, it was more like the concern of what the gay word means, what being gay means, like on a political topic or like a fear topic, like being gay is not easy and it's scary. And it's like, there's so much against it. And he was just wanting to understand it and comprehend it. And whereas my mom, being Japanese, my dad's white from LA actually, but my mom, she grew up very Japanese culture, you know. She didn't have homosexuality in her life, and it was never really a topic besides in, you know, in church context where it's wrong and it's a sin. So it was very intense to have suddenly your oldest son be gay. I get that. And my community, the church in general, like, I totally understand where they're coming from. And being able to process and break down why people react a certain way versus just listening and responding and trying to understand better. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the thing of it is, I didn't change. Like, who I was completely the same, transparent, authentic. Like, me, my personality was the same. It just, people kind of shut off me or decided their judgments and change their perspective of how my relationship with them would be from then on.
I think so. In my experience, I guess I'll just throw this in there, but I feel like that's one of the mistakes that people make. Let's just go specific with this context within the church, right? Where they'll attribute one characteristic to this person, and then all of a sudden, this person is a completely different person. In this case, it's homosexuality to this man, Owen Pearson, right? All of a sudden, he's not the Owen that we knew. He is gay Owen. Oh no, like, who is he now? And I know we're talking specifically in the context of the church, but it really happens everywhere, right? You go out and, you know, let's say, oh, I really like Owen. Oh my God, he's a Democrat. Oh, who is Owen the Democrat? Oh, he's a Republican. Oh my God, and I don't want to talk to him anymore. And all of a sudden the perspective of this human being changes completely because we take this one little piece of who they are, and all of a sudden everything else is affected by that. And that's a problem. And I'm going to ask you about this later. So we won't talk about too much for now, but I think this is a big lesson for everyone, right? Just because you find something that surprises you about somebody else or is different, I think we have to remember that the majority of that person is still the same, right? It's just one little aspect that you weren't aware of. That's true now. So that's that. So for those of you who are listening, if you haven't figured out by now, Owen is gay, and I'm pretty sure you know, but where do you stand currently in your faith now that you are not a youth pastor, you're out in LA, you know, doing quote unquote non-churchy things, which I kind of resonate with, like, where do you stand?
So that's like, it's still a journey for me, and mm-hmm. I appreciate everything you just shared because it totally resonates with me. And you know, I never want to exclude anyone, and that goes for if you're Democrat or Republican, like, or if you're gay or straight, because, you know, most of my friends now are gay, which is awesome, but it doesn't mean, like, I don't want straight friends either, you know?
Sure.
there's just so many layers to what you just said that it's so prevalent in our time right now in our society, to, you know, stop creating walls and you know, just start letting people in with kindness and love, and, you know, embracing people for their differences and letting people know that you are amazing and you are beautiful and you are everything that God meant you to be. You are, and you're working even harder to, you know, make him proud and make yourself proud. It's so important to me. That's why I choose right now to focus on LGBTQ and mental health advocacy, because those are things I didn't see educated enough in my church. And in general in life, like, I saw, as a youth pastor, I got to know the deepest, darkest secrets of families. You know, I got to really get personal with their vulnerability of what they're struggling with, whether it's like mental abuse, disabilities, you know, fights, divorces, substance abuse, suicide, things that people don't share on a normal conversation basis. As a youth pastor, I got to personally be a part of. And I'm never going to take those for granted or say that my time as a youth pastor wasn't valid or beautiful, because it was, and it means so much to me. Mm-hmm. But I hit a plateau. I hit a threshold where I didn't see value anymore in this church environment, because I didn't see changes in their political viewpoints. I didn't see changes in the hierarchy system of, you know, what's good and bad, you know, what is good and bad even mean? You know, I'm someone who hates labels, like, you know, as being biracial, as being gay, being all these different things, like, labels are just labels. And that's why I kind of easily just, not easily, but I transitioned into social media, because social media is a safe space for a lot of people who struggle with mental health and LGBT rights and stuff. So when I naturally, organically transitioned into this space that I'm in now, in this life, I didn't really feel a sense of longing or missing for my church, because what church really is to me is community and driving your values and traditions into a community that can be supportive together. So even though I know I'm not in a religious context, it's like, and I have been honestly also looking for different churches. Like, I don't want to name any, but I've been to a few churches in LA since I moved out here 4 years ago. And a lot of them have the same problems as my church. Surprise, surprise. You know, it's mm-hmm. not just, it wasn't just my church. A lot of moments where I felt, again, defeated. But there are churches here too that have been very great to me and super supportive, but I have all my baggage and stuff to deal with. So it's a process. Mm-hmm. But being a content creator now, I've been able to build a community of people who want to, you know, do this outside of the church space. And, you know, I think as long as your intentions are really true to your character, like, God can work. I just don't think for me right now that God is working in a church environment. And who's to say when that might change? You know, I don't know. Mm-hmm. And I'm open to any opportunity or moments that can shift my narrative. And I say that with a very grain of salt, because I know everyone's at a different place in life always.
Sure.
But for me right now, I just have so much value in the work I'm doing, in these advocacy movements, in my platform on social media, in my daily life with the interactions I have. Mm-hmm. And I'm still learning what it all means and how to really navigate it.
Okay. So you're still very much in the journey of figuring yourself out, figuring out faith, figuring out Christianity, understanding God, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
Which, exactly. I guess we kind of all are. Okay. I'm going to ask you a hard question.
Go for it.
When you grew up in church, the reason why people said that homosexuality is a sin and all that other bad stuff, well, quote unquote bad stuff, is because they believe that's what the Bible said, and that's what Christians believe, and that's what Christianity, the doctrine, says. What is your perspective, or what is your belief? What is your belief on what the Bible says and what Christians believe about homosexuality now? Like, is that different from before? Has that shifted?
Yeah, I mean, if you asked me this a year ago, it would be a different answer than today. Like, a year ago, I was still navigating that and, like, looking into the Bible myself and this different context. But I've been going to this one church in Pasadena, and this one person, he's working on a documentary, and he's studied all types of Bibles. Like, he has, like, a collection of, like, so many Bibles from different time periods, and, like, he's thoroughly studied it, and I forget his name at the time, but if I remember it, I'll let you know.
Okay.
So you could mention it. But basically, what I gathered from his sermon he gave a couple weeks ago, or a month ago now, is there was a group of men who made the New Testament, you know, who were working on the book and working on everything. And they were pretty much, they gathered and found out that the word homosexuality was, the context of that word was misused. And when I say misused, I mean, they were comparing it to other forms of sin that they thought were sins, such as like pedophilia and incest and et cetera. All the things that like actually like bad, like, you know, all the like incest and pedophilia, all that stuff, whatever, like they used one of those words and then translated homophobia into that, homophobic, whatever, into that context. Because the word homosexuality wasn't even used till I think the late 1960s or 50s. I don't remember the exact date. I'm not good at history. But the word homosexuality wasn't used in the olden context of the words and Bibles. And even when I go to like different bookstores or looking on different websites, the word homosexuality is very like misused. And I think, you know, if it's true, I don't know if this is true, but I'm just saying, if my life and the word homosexuality is all because of a typo or misuse of a word, I think it's very interesting, because for me, the Bible is a lot of metaphors and it's a lot of like translations of prophets and everything. So, and I know people interpret a lot of the Bible differently nowadays, which is super interesting and always like a whole another topic. But I think right now, I think there are such bigger issues and problems, and I really need to have this. He's also writing a book, so I really need to like get this topic out there, because it was just life-changing what he was sharing about the context of the Bible and how the word was misused. And if like that's another whole other topic. Like, what if homosexuality was accidentally used as a mistake, you know, versus like an actual like sinful relationship, which would be like an older man with like a younger boy, you know, like underage. Like, what if that word homosexuality was put in that context because they weren't sure how else to say it? You know, what would that mean for our society? The hate already has come. You know, the hate, the negativity already came.
So, still figuring that one out, or?
Yeah, I'm still figuring out. But yeah. No, I'm basically saying like negativity and hate is always going to be abundant, unfortunately, in this world, because people are scared. There's fear. And I truly believe God didn't make mistakes with the homosexual, like with the gay agenda, whatever you want to call it. Like, I, you know, it's just like, why would I choose to be gay if it meant to be suffering so much? You know what I mean? Like,
can you say that again?
I said, why would I choose to be gay if it means all, if it meant all this suffering I had to go through?
Yeah. I think every straight person.
Why would I choose that?
So every straight person who thinks people choose to be gay has to hear that. Because somebody told me that before too. And I just never seen it in that perspective. We're like, you're right. Like, why would you choose that?
Yeah, it's a lot of, it sucks. Like, it's like, it's just a lot of pain. It's a lot of hurt. And it's a lot of adversity and resilience. And I don't have regrets. And I'm grateful for the kids nowadays who are more open. And you know, after I made a coming out video too, so many kids in my church back home came out to me and in confidence. And it's just like, it's a growing number of people who are sharing more about who they are. And it's because we're building a safer space and a more opening place in all environments, not just God environments or church environments, but like in every part of life. And I think that's so important to realize is what I went through matters. It's validated. A lot of it wasn't the prettiest, but you know, I'm grateful that I went through it because it got me to where I'm at. But again, I would not have chosen to have suffered as much as I did. That would never have been my choice.
For sure. I think you said something really important. Or maybe I just interpreted it as important, but basically it's that we're still trying to figure out a lot of stuff. And I think the danger that we get into as people is that we think we have it all figured out. And let me just say this from my perspective of being in ministry for a while. When I went to seminary, I went and got like, you know, all the required degrees, couple of masters and whatever. And I was supposed to be a quote unquote theological expert on what the Bible says. For those of you who aren't Christian, I apologize for getting all theological and kind of geeking out about this. But basically, we had to be experts on what the Bible says in order to be able to share that because we believe it, right? This is what our faith is based upon. And by no means am I making any theological statements throughout this whole episode or even the show in general, right? The whole point is that we want to hear the other perspective. But that being said, I feel like as much as we need to be experts in what we're trained to be experts on, we always have to maintain that level of humility where we're like, well, you know, as much as we're experts, maybe there's something we're missing. In this particular context, there's a lot of stuff in the Bible that I've been taught. And I question, not in a sense like, oh, that's not true, but oh, like how does that work, right? How is God in control of everything while at the same time I sit here and choose to have this conversation with Owen Pearson? Like, can they really go together? Do these dichotomies come together? And like we sit and we think like, oh man, my brain can't fathom how that happens, but yet here we are. It's just proof that we have to maintain a level of humility to show that we don't understand everything and we have to be okay with that. And that goes for people within the church, that goes for experts in any field. Otherwise you just cause a lot more conflict than you need to. Where were we? I guess I asked you about what you thought, and yeah. So thank you for sharing your thoughts and
yeah, thank you too.
What your belief not only is, but also what it's becoming on the journey that you're going through right now. And maybe if we catch back up in a year or two, it'll be somewhere else, somewhere completely different, somewhere just more progressed and detailed in what you've experienced and what you believed. I'll be curious to see. Yeah.
I did want to mention, like, because I know you're a dad and that's so exciting and awesome. And, you know, my parents, you know, I love my parents. They're great. And there's just probably so many parents out there that, you know, they love their kids. You know, I'm not a parent, but as a youth pastor, I felt that love, that parental heart, if you will, of children, like that you want the best for them. You want to help them in any situation. And it's not that you think you're right. It's just, you know, that they're still learning and on their journey. So you want to help push them in the best direction, help make them make good choices. But I want to definitely strongly encourage like everyone out there, no matter your sexual orientation or, you know, where your kids are in life, like just pause sometimes and think like, you know, if your kid were to come to you with a question or a concern or an honest opinion or just something, and it happens to be like about their sexuality, like, please just really listen with an open mind and open heart and be in the power of knowing that you've cultivated a relationship with your child where they feel they can trust you and open to you about something that's so important to them. You know, that's what I really want to emphasize is, you know, don't try and change your kid because that's never going to work. It's just going to push them away. But really listen and be, like you said, have humility to meet them where they're at and really help them discover it. I think that's so important.
And, oh man, I'm gonna have to play that on repeat. And that goes for everyone. I think if we were to sum up the mission of what we're doing, period, right? Not just in the LGBT community or mental health or whatever, like just this whole thing is, let's be humble and listen. And I think what you said about having a child coming to you, like how many kids don't even want to talk to their parents, right? Because they want to hide this stuff. Like I was one of those. And it took me 30 years to start beginning to open up to my parents a little bit more. But if a child wants to go speak to their parent, that speaks a lot to the relationship that you've cultivated. And it's a beautiful thing.
Mm-hmm. I just got goosebumps because it takes so much courage. Just think back to any time you talk to your parents. Exactly. Like you just want your parents full love and acceptance. And for you to go to them with something that you don't know with how they're going to react is so scary. But parents and people who have those opportunities or moments, just know that, you know, that kid is having such a very honest and vulnerable moment with you. Mm. So please be careful and know that, you know, they really need your support and love.
Oh man, that's beautiful. Give him a hug. If this coronavirus wasn't happening, I'd give you a hug. And
virtual hugs all around.
Yeah. Man, let's just end it with that, because I think that's something that we could all take away from it. And if we were to practice that, society would be a beautiful place. Owen, where is the place that people can find you? Because you have a lot of good content and I feel like people will just learn a lot from you.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate it, Paul. Like you said in the beginning of this podcast, you can find me at Owen Pearson. It's OwenPierson. It's spelled an I because it's a combination of my parents' names. So that's a fun little fact about me. My mom's name's Tomio. My dad's name's Edwin. So they combined the win and the O to make Owen. And that's why it's spelled differently. But yeah, you can find me on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, TikTok, all the places. But yeah, if anyone has any moments that they want to share or questions they had, feel free to reach out to me through email as well. It's at PearsonOwen@gmail.com. Always happy to talk more.
This is what I was going to say in the beginning that I didn't say. But the whole Owen Pearson, the way it's spelled, I think you said on Carla's podcast, what would Carla say? Shout out to Carla. Is if you take the I out, you become your own person. Is that how you say that?
That is. Yep. I think it's relatable to everyone. It's super cheesy. When you take out the I's in my name, my full name, I become my own person. And I think that plays into the whole humility part and the whole discovery of people and who we are.
That's awesome. All right, everyone. That's Owen Pearson. Be sure to connect with him. He has a lot of value to share, and we have much to learn. Until next time.